this week's Sedra mentions that every time a certain Tane had to see the Roman authorities, he was wont to delve into the Sedra of Vayishlach in order to find therein a clue as to the in talking to the Roman authorities. And the Medrash also mentions that when Rabbi Yehuda Anossi had to address a letter to Antoninus, he first looked through the Sedra of Vayishlach. The Medrash mentions one story that one letter he addressed Antoninus with the caption Mi'abdicho Yehude Le'adoini Antoninus. Some of his disciples were critical of this self-imposed civility, and they even had the audacity to mention it to him in so many words that it is not befitting a leader of Jewry to address a Roman ruler in such a servile manner. And he answered, Rabbi Yehuda Anossi answered, am I better than Yaakov Avinu? If it was befitting for Yaakov to address Esau, it is certainly befitting Yehuda Anossi. This means that the Sedra of Vayishlach, which contains the story of Yaakov's return to Eretz Yisrael, as well as his confrontation with Esau, constitutes a guide to the Jews throughout the generations as to our demeanor towards the non-Jews. Of course, for the Jews in the time of Rabbi Yehuda Anossi, it was only necessary to delve into Vayishlach to take notice of the approach taken by our forefather only on certain occasions. Ordinarily, those Jews did not have to mingle with the non-Jews. They led an isolated life. Today, however, there is not one day in our lives when we are not confronted with the children of Esau. We are constantly compelled to mingle with them. Consequently, it is incumbent upon us to delve thoroughly into this week's Sedra. The Sedra commences with the message of peace and love that Yaakov sent to his brother Esau. And the message of peace opens with the following words. Koisem rin ladoin eleis. Koyom aravdi ho Yaakov, im lovon garti voeicha ados. Our sages found in this expression of im lovon garti voeicha adoto the reason for Jacob's, and when I say Jacob, I don't mean only Jacob, but I also mean Jacob's descendants, for Maasi Yaakov, if he's similarly born in. The reason for Yaakov's and Yaakov's descendants' ability to survive, among the nations of the world as a unique nation. I'll say to say that the expression in Logon Galati has two meanings. First of all, it means I was a geir while I stayed with Lavan. Consequently, you have no reason to hate me. When I say this, I was a geir, and 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 I was a geir. This is one meaning. Another meaning, which on the surface does not seem to be in line with the literal meaning of the expression Dati Bigematria Tayak. The numerical value, not only the numerical value, but the letters of Dati correspond with the letters of Tayak. Kelema in Lovon Horosho Garti Vitayak Mitri Shomarati Ilulomaditi Mimas of Oi. Now the first interpretation we can understand. Yaakov is telling Esau, according to the first interpretation of this expression, that he has no reason to hate him. And he has no reason to be afraid of him, because he has been a geir and he is not likely to become a master over Esau. But what is the meaning of the second explanation? In Lovon Horosho Garti Vitayag Mitzvah Shomarti Velolomariti Mimaisof Aroim, will that induce Esau to shower love upon Yaakov because of the fact that Yaakov has in the past persevered in his endeavor to comply with the dictates of God? On the contrary, this message of Imlovon Horosho Garti Vitayag Mitzvah Shomarti Velolomariti Mimaisof Aroim can only tend to impress Esau with the notion that it is impossible for Esau and for Esau's children to live together with Yaakov and Yaakov's children, simply because Yaakov is obstinate. Yaakov will never agree to become integrated within the general community, to assimilate himself, to adapt himself to Esau's ideas. Of course, Yaakov was bent with perseverance to comply with all the dictates of the Torah. But why did Yaakov have to tell Esau at the first moment when he was attempting to gain the goodwill and love of Esau? When such a message at first blush seems to achieve the opposite result. But it seems that herein our sages try to convey the idea that the problem of anti-Semitism cannot be solved by any attempt on the part of Yaakov to adapt himself to the ways of Esau. The Medrash says on this week's Seder, in connection with the pasuk of Ayoretz Esau Likrosei Vayichapkeyu Vayipeil Al Tzavorov Vayishokeyu Vayifku, there are certain dots on top of Vayishokeyu. One time the Midrash says that the reason for these dots is because the kiss and the kisses and the embraces of Esau were not sincere. Another Tanya, however, says that these particular kisses and embraces were sincere. And he expresses himself in a very remarkable manner. Halacha l'meisha misinai she'esof seinei es Yaakov. Elo she'beis isho nichmiru rachmov al Yaakov. Generally it is true, it's halacha l'meisha misinai, that Esof dislikes Yaakov. But at that particular moment, he was motivated by feelings of compassion and love towards his wife. This is the reason as to why the Reish Lakish has that. In order to indicate that this particular kiss and embrace of Esau, even though it was sincere and it was at that moment in consonance with his inner feelings, was not in consonance with the general trend of Esau. Now, in order to understand the real meaning of this mimer, we have to take notice of a certain remark made by the Rambam in his Hakdamah to the Peirush HaMishnah. The Rambam there discusses the concept of halacha l'meisha misinai. And he mentions that one should not be misled into the notion that inasmuch as our sages designate only certain halachas by the appellation of halacha l'meisha misinai, that it consequently follows that all the other halachas were not mikubal l'meisha misinai. The number of halachas designated as halacha l'meisha misinai in so many words are few. You can count them on your fingers. Does that mean that all the other halachas were not mikubal l'meisha misinai? Then there is no Torah Shebal Peh. The whole Torah Shebal Peh in its entirety was mikubal l'meisha misinai. Why then do our sages refer only to a few halachas? Is halacha l'meisha misinai like the halacha ibut mizuzo, v'shmo halacha l'meisha misinai, shiotut halacha l'meisha misinai? When the whole Torah Shebal Peh halacha l'meisha misinai. So the Rambam gives the answer that true, the whole Torah Shebal Peh is mikubal l'meisha misinai. But when a certain halacha can be deduced by means of the Yudgim Umidu Yishatir on Nidreshes Bayan, like the halacha that Kesef is effective in Kedusha, that was also Mikubal l'meisha misinai. The halacha of Ayin tachas Ayin means money, not malish. It was also Mikubal l'meisha misinai. But these are halachas that can be deduced by the various techniques of the Torah Shebal Peh, by the Midrash Hatira and Reshes Bayan. Consequently, Chazal do not refer to these halachas, the halacha l'meisha misinai. The concept of Mige, of Rof, of Chazoke, like Chazoke and Freya b'Sirat Mani, and all the numerous halachas mentioned in Izikin and Noshin, which can be deduced by means of common sense and logic through the application of deductive and inductive reasoning, are also mikubal l'meisha misinai, but they are not referred as halacha l'meisha misinai, simply because they are based upon flaw, upon logical deduction. But whenever our sages mention the Allah that is not based upon the Yud Gimel Midrash Atayon Parashat. No, can it be deduced inductively or deductively for the reasoning processes, then our sages will designate these as halacha lemishnah. In other words, halacha lemishnah in Sinai has reference to a concept that cannot be explained by means of logic, by means of common sense. Gudatik mechitzta. Halacha lemishnah. We have to consider a mechitze that actually extends only 10 tefachim and see if it extended above, up to the rotiyah. Can it be explained? We cannot understand it. It is beyond the inquisitive grasp of human understanding. But this is our Halacha Mishnah. We have to conceive it as such. It cannot be conceived any other way. Of the well-known Mitzius, it's a matter of Mitzius, it's not a deen, that Esav saw in Eliyahu. In the heart of Esav, there are certain prejudices against Yah. Psychologists have written books to the cause of this presence, but no one is able to explain. The more you write as to the cause of anti-Semitism, the more nonsense you can conjure up. It cannot be explained. It's a halacha lemishum here. It's beyond the grasp of human understanding. Now, many tried to understand the phenomenon of anti-Semitism, and actually the name anti-Semitism is an inaccurate name, because according to the name, then all those who dislike Jews should also dislike Arabs, should dislike Nasser and the Mufti. But it seems that all the anti-Semites cleave unto the other side. They aim their arrows only at Jews. It's not anti-Semitism, it's anti-Jewishism. But we'll use this term. Some try to understand anti-Semitism on the basis of the difference of the Jew. Someone who is different than he is. And this is true. There are many whites who are prejudiced against the Negroes because the color of the skin is different. But if this had been so, then hatred and prejudice towards the Jew should be applied only towards those Jews who are really different than the non-Jews. But it should not be shown towards the Jews who try to assimilate themselves and who try to wipe out any vestige of Jewishness. Now, there are so many Jews who are so influential in Jewish life, who are ashamed of their Jewish origin. Not long ago, I read an article by a writer in the commentary, and he says that in his opinion, and I think that this writer was a very important officer in the Federation, I don't remember whether the president, whether he is a former president or a former vice president of the Federation. So he writes that in his opinion, the endeavors on the part of the Jews throughout the generations to told Jewish survival was not worth one hair on the head of one infant. He writes us an article in the commentary. Now, but the anti-Semites will dislike this kind of Jew as much as they'll dislike Satmar Hasidim, maybe more. So it is not the difference of the Jew that motivates the anti-Semites into hatred and prejudice. What then is the cause? The answer is halacha v'neshi misnah. We do not know. But one thing can be determined on the basis of empiricism. Maybe not on the basis of logic, but on the basis of empiricism it can be determined. With that, beyond any doubt, that whereas it is impossible for Jews to gain the genuine love of Esau, of the children of Esau. And when I say the children of Esau, I do not mean Dafke, the biological children of Esau. Because just as there is a halacha that every human being who is nichnas tachas kanfei hashchinah, whether he is of Puerto Rican origin, of Negro origin, or Italian origin, of French origin, of German origin, is considered spiritually child of David. So also there is a halacha that every non-Jew is a spiritual child of Israel. The Negro is the white, all the non-Jews are the spiritual children of Israel. It's impossible to gain the genuine love of the children of Israel. But it is possible for the Jews to commend the respect of the children of Israel. And our sages say it in so many words in their comment in the Medrash Eicha on the last psukim of Eicha. Hashiveinu adishem milecho v'noshubo chadish yomeinu kikerem ki mois miyastanu potafto leinu amiot. Now what is the connection between the pasuk of Hashiveinu and the pasuk of Ki Mois Miyastonu Kotzavto Leinu? The practice among the Jews is that whenever we read Eicha, so after Ki Mois Miyastonu Kotzavto Leinu Amiyot, we repeat Hashiveinu Adishem Melecho Vinoshu. Because we do not want to conclude with Idvar Poronius. Now why did Yirmiyah conclude with Idvar Poronius? If Jews are so reluctant to conclude with Idvar Poronius, apparently there is a connection between the pasuk of Hashiveinu Adishem Elecho V'noshubo Chadish Yomeinu Kikedem and the pasuk of Ki Mois Miyastonu Kotzavto Leinu. And I will say to say, Im Ketef Bilvat יש כנגדנו, יש תקווה. אבל אם מלישו יש כאן, אין תקווה. If it is only a question of dislike, of resentment from the children of Esau towards the Jews, then there is hope. Then there can be peaceful coexistence between Jews and non-Jews. But if there is contempt from the non-Jews towards the Jews, then ain't equal. Then God forbid there is no hope. Jews ought not aspire towards the love of Esau that they will never regain until the Messianic days. No matter how hard they try, they will show towards the Messiah, they will not regain the love. But it is possible for the Jews to gain the respect of the non-Jews. And And once we gain the respect of the non-Jews, then we are bound to emerge victorious. Because if it is only a matter of ketet, of antagonism, of resentment, of dislike, then yesh tikva. Then we know that the ultimate victor, the ultimate moral victory is on our side. But if Mishayishvan, if Jews deport themselves in such a manner that they will arouse contempt towards them in the heart of the non-Jews, then ein tikva, then they will be dislike coupled with contempt. And dislike coupled with contempt is very dangerous. Now, the French people traditionally has been hostile towards the German people. But war, the Frenchmen humiliated, pillaged and robbed and killed by the Germans the way the Jews were? Why not? Well, the answer is very simple. Because the Germans had hostility and the resentment and antagonism toward the French people. But they did not have any contempt. They had respect for the French people. We have to aspire towards the regaining of respect towards the Jew. And how can a Jew command the respect of the non-Jew? Not by trying to adapt himself. Through goodwill, yes. But, as I mentioned in the Ashkofishir on Parsha Vayeo, I think it was, that we always have to draw a distinction between association in friendship and association in fellowship. We have to show goodwill toward the non-Jews. We are bound to show goodwill, not only toward those non-Jews who are not pagans, even towards pagan non-Jews. Association in friendship, that has to be extended toward all non-Jews, regardless of race, creed, or color, or station in life. It has to be extended even to those who are not morally superior, even to those who are morally delinquent. Association in friendship toward sinners can only tend to elevate the one that is helped as well as the helper. But we should always be on guard against association with non-Jews and even with irreligious Jews in fellowship. Now, this distinction between association in friendship and association in fellowship is implicit in the expression garati. Yaakov did not say im lovon darati. Bio, the term bio, implies not only association in friendship, but also association in fellowship. Husband and wife, father and children, father and mother and children, live in one bio. Galati, however, also means to live to stay. But gati means when one stays with another, but he always feels that he is a stranger. Stranger? One who feels in his heart that he is a stranger will indulge in association and friendship. But he'll always be unable to associate in fellowship because he doesn't feel at home. He couldn't drink with someone with whom he doesn't feel at home. He can help him. He can try to lift his spirit, even if he feels a stranger toward him. But he will never be able to associate in fellowship with someone that is a stranger to him. This is how Yaakov associated with Rav. Yaakov worked very hard for Laban. He did not have any nights when he was comfortable. He was loyal to Laban. He was devoted to him. He associated with Laban in friendship, but he was always a guest. He could not associate with Laban in fellowship. And if we associate with Laban in fellowship, then Laban is bound to have contempt for us. And the most you can expect from Laban, if Yaakov associates with Laban in fellowship, is to drink from the lips of Laban the words, the Jew is as good and as bad as the non-Jew. The maximum that you can wring from the lips of Laban through association and fellowship. But even when you wring this remark from the lips of Laban, it is still an insincere remark. Because intellectually he might feel that the Jew is not worse than the non-Jew. The non-Jew, as the Italians in America have given a substantial percentage of criminals, and the Jew have given a substantial percentage of delinquents and criminals. He will, with his lips, he'll say that we should not feel that the Jew is worse, but in his heart he will be moved by prejudice. And the more we associate with Laban in fellowship, the more we drink together with Laban, the more we dance together with Laban, the more contempt he'll have for Yaakov. Now, this is the first lesson that is to be deduced from the Sefer Vayishlach. And this has very concrete application to our life. Now, the question sometimes comes up. Should we integrate ourselves with the non-Jews, with the real religious Jews, in certain matters? Well, the answer would be, insofar as association in friendship is concerned, insofar as support for hospitals is concerned, we should not keep aloof. Insofar as support and maintenance of institutions for patients who are physically or mentally ill is concerned, we have to be united. We have to support the federations insofar as the support goes for hospitals. But insofar as association in fellowship is concerned, insofar as support for an institution like Educational Alliance is concerned, an institution which of late has become a chief instrument of assimilation, an institution which aspires to assimilate Jews with non-Jews, and where some of the leaders are fighting against those youngsters who refuse to have dancing corps for Jews only, because that is not in consonance with the American spirit of democracy. In regard to an institution like Educational Alliance, where nuns are engaged as the teachers for the children, then we have to say, the more we associate in fellowship with Puerto Rican children, Italian children, and have to show them I'm not prejudiced against them, we should try to help these children. And if we want to give money for the maintenance of separate programs of entertainment for these children, then this is a laudable feat. But to establish integrated programs of entertainment for Jewish children and Italian children, that can only be conducive to intermarriage and to conversion. And only a week ago I received a telephone call from a certain rabbi, and he told me that one of the graduates of a certain well-known yeshiva tana in Coney Island intermarried because the boy was advised to go to a Y. And whom did he meet in the Y? Non-Jewish girls. And that is done under the guise of love and fellowship and goodwill. And will we be able to regain the respect of the non-Jews for this kind of association in fellowship? No, we can only regain the contempt. And you can only aggravate the prejudice that exists within the heart of all non-Jews. And then, Yaakov receives the report that Esau is coming out against him with a group of 400 soldiers who are armed not for the purpose of peaceful coexistence, but rather for the purpose of warfare. And Yaakov did everything humanly possible to ward off a physical conflict, but he took all the precautionary measures to face any eventuality. He sent gifts to Esau, and he divided and he prayed to God, and he divided his camp into two divisions. And then Yaakov crossed all the members of his household to the other side of Yabok. Yaakov remained alone, as the Torah points out, Vayivoser Yaakov Levado. And then something happened. A mysterious person approached Yaakov and he struggled with him until the breaking of the dawn. At the break of dawn, this mysterious person realize that he will not be able to prevail against Yaakov. And consequently, this mysterious person touched Yaakov at the hollow of his thigh. Of which Yaakov's thigh became overstrained, as a result of which Yaakov started limping. And then Yaakov refused to let the mysterious person go until he gave him his blessing of Rikoshim Ho Yaakov Kim Yisrael Kisorisoim Lekim Vimanoshim Batur. The Torah is very brief in respect to the identity of this mysterious person. It only intimates that this mysterious person was an angel. Our sages, however, penetrated deeply into the meaning of this incident and into the identity of this mysterious person. Mihoyo, the Medrash asks. Various answers are given. One rabbi gives the answer that he was a malach who disguised himself, bimalach anvuo, in the garb of a listing, Tiako Listos Nidnero. He appeared to him in a prophetic vision in the form of a bandit. A bandit with a club in his hand, ready to kill and to rob, to pillage and to murder. Another rabbi says, Tiakum Nidmalei. This mysterious person appeared to Yaakov in the form of a pagan. Another rabbi says, Kitomit Chacham Nidmalei. He appeared in the garb of scholarship and wisdom by using philosophy and intellectual falsity. This representative of Esau, the social Esau, tried to convert Yaakov. And then another rabbi says, the social Esau, the representative of Esau, appeared to Yaakov in the form of a shepherd under the guise of faith and salvation, and in the name of morality and love, he tried to convert Yaakov. And all through the night, this Orishal Esau has been struggling and contending with Yaakov, but he could not prevail. And even at the break of dawn, when the representative of Esau saw the light, he still persevered in his struggle with Yaakov. But Yaakov refused to let him go. It is true that as a result of this struggle, that took place dusk, in the time of dawn, Yaakov became crippled. Yaakov did not become crippled throughout the struggle that took place through the night, but only through the struggle that took place in daylight, while the representative of Esau was enlightened. Then Yaakov became crippled. He became became crippled, but Yaakov still persevered in his resistance towards the demands that are imposed by the representatives of Esau. And he did not let him go until Yaakov was able to wring from the lips of Esau the bracha of Lo Yikore, Lo Yakev Yomei Rechimcho, Kim Yisrael, Kisov Yisoyim Rechim, Rimanoshim Vatoho. Our sages say, as I mentioned so many times, Omar HaKadosh Baruch Hu Yaakov, Yaakov Ato Simon Libreho, Yaakov, you are a symbol for your children. All these incidents and all these vicissitudes that overtook Yaakov happened were manipulated by Providence in order that the children of Yaakov will be able to know how to deport themselves in their confrontation with the children of Esau. Yaakov did not have to suffer so much. It was only for the purpose that Yaakov might be a guide for the future generations that he suffered so much. And he was overtaken by so many vicissitudes. What happened to Yaakov in this trouble, which according to the Rambam was only Bimara and war, happened actually to the children of Yaakov. Throughout the long and dark night of exile, the representative of Esau has been struggling with Yaakov in different forms. There were times when the representative of Esau was disguised, or not disguised, I should say, was dressed. That was the genuine dress of Esau. When the representative of Esau was dressed in the garb of a bandit who killed and who pillaged, the representative of Esau through the Crusades tried to force Yaakov into spiritual surrender, but Yaakov did not come. There were times when the representative of Esau was dressed in the garb of scholarship and intellectuality, and through falsity, this representative of Esau, and through intellectual prejudices and sophistry, he tried to convert Yaakov. And there are still today such representatives of Esau. An excellent example is the so-called Italian Tombi, well-dressed in the garb of scholarship and wisdom, philosophy and history. He tries to convert the Jews. And of course, there were times, many times throughout the generations, when the representative of Esau was dressed in the garb of a shepherd, who was trying to take all the lost children, the lost sheep of Israel under his protection, and to bring salvation to these lost souls. Still tried to convert Jacob, but this time the representative of Aesop employed a different approach. Now, Vayevach has two meanings, the Mephoshim say, Vayevach Ishimei. One meaning of Vayevach is he threw dust into the eyes of Yaakov. Avok, Samok. That was the approach that was taken by the bigots among Esau, who tried to convert Yaakov through bigotry and through prejudice. But at the break of dawn, the Vayevach, the struggle, assumed another form. Then it acquired the meaning of embracing. Then it was a rendezvous with the Sar Yishar Esav. A rendezvous that is externally backed up by love and goodwill, by integration and friendship and fellowship. And whereas in the struggle that took place in the darkness, in the Middle Ages, Yaakov did not become crippled, but in the struggle that took place after emancipation, Yaakov became crippled. And as I mentioned last week, there are two kinds of Nisoyenes. One Nisoyen is the Nisoyen of the Mizbeach. One Nisoyen is the Nisoyen of the Matevo. Yaakov withstood the test of the Mizbeach very well, but Yaakov did not succeed so much in the test of the Matzivo. But in spite of any crippling that was forced upon Yaakov, Yaakov still persevered in his endeavors towards cleavage with the God of Israel, and in his strivings towards the land of Israel. And what did the Sar Yishar Esav try to achieve at the break of dawn? He had one aim, and that will explain the reason as for Yaakov's perseverance in wringing this specific blessing from the lips of the Sar Yishar Esav. He was bent upon reading this specific blessing. Apparently, the Sar Yishar Esav wanted Yaakov's name to be only Yaakov and not Yisrael. Yaakov and Esav represent two different concepts. Yaakov means Yodei Yoichedet Bat Esav. Yaakov represents the children of Yaakov as holding on to the heel of Esav, always trying to integrate themselves and associating themselves with Esav. Yisrael, however, represents a different concept, an antithetical concept. Namely, Kisoriso in Elikim Rimanoshim Vatuhal. Now there are two explanations as to Elikim. According to Unkeles, so it's Elikim. It's Kodesh. It is reference to God. And the Yin means the first Yin, according to Unkeles, means before. The second Yin means against. According to Unkeles, Kisoriso in Elikim Rimanoshim Vatuhal means for thou hast driven before God and against men, and thou hast prevailed. So the first thing has the meaning of before God, that is shown against God. And the second thing has the meaning of against people. According to Yenis and Benizia, and according to the Rambam, it's Elohim, it's Chayu. means, for thou hast striven against angels and against men, and thou hast prevailed. But whatever explanation we accept, the meaning is the same. But let us explain first, according to the meaning mentioned in Unkelos. The Telekim is reference to God, it's Kodesh. And the Imelekim means before God. What does it mean? Kiso kiso Imelekim v'imanoshim v'suchal. Thou hast struggled before God and against man. In other words, a limitation is imposed upon Yaakov's right to struggle against Esau. Only before God he had the right to struggle against Esau. In respect to matters of principle, on a spiritual and on a moral level, then Yaakov has the right, and it is incumbent upon him to struggle against Esau. If Esau tries to convert him, then Yaakov is to refuse and to resist with dignity and courage any attempt at assimilation, whether it comes from biological descendants of Esau, or it comes from spiritual descendants of Esau, who biologically might be descendants of Yaakov. Before God, we have to struggle against people. It doesn't say, Vim goyim vatuchal, kisorisem lekim vim goyim vatuchal, vim anoshim vatuchal. Before God, we have to struggle against men. On a spiritual and on a moral level, we have to struggle, not chas v'sholem physically, but morally we have to struggle. But on a material level, if no spiritual issue is involved, then we don't have to struggle against Esau. We are allowed to struggle. We have no right to struggle. And if we do struggle against Esau on a material and civic level, then we are bound to gain the contempt of Esau. By struggling, however, on a spiritual level against Esau, we are bound to gain the respect of Esau. Before God, we have to struggle against Esau. But if it's not before God, if it's not on a material level, on a civic level, on a social level, on an economic level, then there can be integration with Esau. There is no reason for any struggling. And according to the other explanation, the meaning is the same. According to the Rambam, it's Chayo, it's Elohim. It means Malochim, and it represents the forces of nature. Man is to, a Jew is to counteract the environment, the physical environment, and the social environment. On a spiritual and moral level, of course. Adaptability is a very important quality, man. It is a very important quality in the whole animal kingdom. It is through the application of this quality of adaptability that the various species in the animal kingdom were able to preserve themselves. And men too can resort to adaptability on a physical level. But on a spiritual level, man is not to resort to the quality of adaptability. Man is not to adapt himself to the environment. A Jew is to say, before God, we have to struggle against nature and against man. We cannot allow ourselves to be swayed by the instincts that rage within us. This was the endeavor of the Sohish of Esau, who is disguised in the robe of a pagan. And of course, paganism has a great appeal and a lot of glamour. To the guild! But we are to resist this appeal. We are not to adjust ourselves spiritually to the environment. We are to counteract the environment. We are to sublimate our instincts and lift these instincts to a level of bishop. So Yisrael represents the concept of struggle, of complexion, of resistance towards the environment, towards a self. Whereas Yaakov represents the concept of integration, of adjustment, of adaptability. Now the Torah does not advise the Jews to divest ourselves of the name of Yaakov. No! In this week's Seder, the Torah says, Vayero alikin al Yaakov voy bivoy nipad larom Vayvorach I say, Vayero alikin Shimcho Yaakov. Your name is Yaakov, will you call Shimcho Yaakov? King Yisrael Yeshmecho, Vayikosh Me Yisrael. Now there seems to be an apparent conflict. First the Rebbeinu Shom says to him, Shimcho Yaakov, and as the Gemara in Bracha says, that this is to be distinguished from the change of name that took place in respect to Avram. In respect to Avram, once God added the hay to his name, then he was divested of Avram. But here, even though he gave him another name, even though God gave him another name, but he was to retain the old name Yaakov. So the question is, if Shimcha Yaakov, if the name of Yaakov is to be retained, if you are to hold on to the heels of Esau, if you are not to keep yourself aloof from Esau, if you are to integrate yourself within the general community, how can God say, Rikoel Shimcha Yaakov, Shimcha Yaakov? How can we keep aloof and integrate ourselves at the same time? The answer is, Shimcha Yaakov, on a material level, on a civic level, on an economic level, then you'll retain the name Yaakov. Don't establish any ghettos. Don't isolate yourself. But on a spiritual level, on a moral level, don't try to associate yourself with the children of Esau in fellowship, in drinking together and dancing together, in socializing together. Your name will be Israel. So we saw him achieve a Muslim on a spiritual and moral level. So there you have to keep yourself aloof. You have to isolate yourself from the rest of the community. Then you command the respect of the Jewish people. And this is the broche that Yaakov tried to wink at the break of dawn from the lips of the sorry Shalishal. Now, we know that the break of dawn in the history of mankind was at the time of the French Revolution. That was the time when the nations of the world declared freedom, liberty, equality, and democracy for all. But the motto of the French Revolution was, the Jew as a human being should have all the rights. The Jew as a Jew should have no rights. That was the endeavor on the part of Esau, who, on the part of the Sorishal Esau, who was dressed in the garb of scholarship, in the garb of philosophy and intellectuality, and who was speaking the name of justice and righteousness, freedom and democracy, will grant you emancipation, but your name has to be only Yaakov, the Sorishal Esau said. Only Yaakov! You always have to hold on to the heels of Esau. There is no such thing as a Jewish people. Napoleon called together the so-called Sanhedrin of the Jews, and Napoleon was able to wring from the lips of the members of the Sanhedrin that the Jews do not constitute the people. He was even able to wring from the lips of the members of the Sanhedrin that he assembled that there is no sin in a Jew intermarrying. They only said, the members of the Sanhedrin, that Kedushin cannot be held between the Jew and the Gentile woman. It cannot take effect as a king and Kedushin. But it can take effect as a king and as a relationship that exists between the husband and the common law wife. There is no sin. The sin against intermarriage applied only to pagans, but not to Christians. Of course, this is booze. Ignorance. The Issa against intermarriage applies equally to a pagan non-Jew and to a Gatesha. The same fire. But he was able, Napoleon, to wring this statement from the Sanhedrin that he assembled. Why was he so interested in wringing such a statement? Because he wanted to imbue Yaakov with the notion that he has only one name, Yaakov, which means Yodi Yosef Makareko. He can demand rights, but only as a member of the human race. But as a Jew, he has no rights. He's not the Israel. The Solisha Leso was so liberal, and he was so enlightened at the break of dawn that he was willing to grant him religious liberty. As long as the Jew recognize the Jews are a nation, as long as the Jews will give up their aspirations and their striving to Eretz Yisrael, as long as the Jews will consider themselves members of the Jewish faith only, as long as the Jews in France will entertain the notion that a Jew in France has much more in common with a Christian in France than with a Jew in Germany. As long as the Jew will consider himself only as Yaakov, as Yodi Yechelet Makedeso, so then he'll be satisfied. He'll grant him emancipation and equality and liberty with the conviction that in due course he'll be able to convert Jacob. Once Jacob gives up the idea of Yisrael, of Toriso, Imelikim, Imanoshim, Vaituchal, of struggling against the general environment on a spiritual level, even if he demands religious liberty, but he'll give up his religion if he considers himself only as a member of a certain faith and as a part of the nation in which he lives. But Yaakov did not pledge Esav go, the sorry shall Esav go, until the sorry shall Esav agreed that whether he likes it or not, the Jews are a unique people. They are Israel. And that he cannot fulfill his duties towards the children of Yaakov unless he acknowledges that there are certain rights that the Jew possesses, not as a member of the human race, but as a Jew. That was the bracha that Yaakov tried to wring from the lips of Esau. Now, Sunday, there won't be a regular shiur now, but on Sunday, so the shiur will start at 9 o'clock in the morning, because I have to take a plane to Buffalo. So it's 9 o'clock.
What? Pino Amru is a metaphron, so small to same rabbi. Metaphron be gematria sin dal yud, it's one of the same.
That's allowed to pronounce it, because it's one of the same.
Sin dal yud.
Yeah.
It means Mishabit Malchus HaTeva. It is, of course, it is reference to God, and God is designated by that name because God controls all the workings and operations of nature. He knows and controls the operations of nature. Mishabit Malchus HaTeva. That's what the shame of Shin Dalet Yud implies. Now, Tishmi B'Tirbei has reference to the Malach Metatron and Metatron B'Gimatria Shin Dalet Yud. I didn't set up one last. Alright. It's probably so. So what does it mean? That's it. To the Jews, that when they enter the land of Israel, he'll send them his messenger, his Malach. He'll watch them in their invasions, and they should be on guard not to revolt against him, because he'll not forgive. This Malach will not forgive. Why? Because the name of God is in him. What does it mean? It's Metatron. And Tatran the Gematrius in Galilee. So there is a remarkable explanation of this passage in the Tiferes Yisrael at the end of Dushan. You can look at that. A remarkable explanation. Now, Metatran is the Sar HaTeva. That's the angel of nature. Metatran, as the Meir explains it, represents the cosmos. The principle of causation that there is nature. And of course, this Metatron is the messenger of God, because all the laws of nature represent the will of God. This is Metatron. He is the Sar HaTeva. Now, Metatron is the Gematria Shin Dalet Yud. What does the Shem of Shin Dalet Yud represent? It means Mishabit Malchus HaTeva. It designates God as the creator and as the one who controls all the operations of nature. As the one who harnesses all the hidden forces that inhere in nature. Mishabit Malchus HaTeva. Actually, Mishabit means harnesses. He harnesses the operations, the forces of nature. Now, the Tiferet Yisrael says that the meaning of the Yoneichi Shaleach Malach Lifonecho is that God said to the Israelites, while you are in the Midbar, then the Hasgoch is Hasgoch Mitzvah. Because God guided the Jews to the Midbar not in accordance with the natural world. Everything in the Midbar was repugnant to the laws of nature. The food that they obtained was not in accordance with nature. It was Ashkochanis. But this Ashkochanis will not last forever. When you reach out Israel, so then the Ashkochan will be not Ashkochanis, but it will be Ashkochativi. The Ashkochan that is also by God. Nothing takes place in the world without God's guidance, without God's providence. But the Hasgoche, there are two kinds of Hasgoche. There is the Hasgoche Nisis, and there is the Hasgoche Tivis. The Hasgoche Tivis is realized through the natural medium. Through the laws of nature, through certain psychological approaches, it does not run counter to the principle of causation. In the Midbar, everything was repugnant to the laws of nature. They obtained their food in a miraculous way. They were led in a miraculous way. They were punished in a miraculous way. They were rewarded in a miraculous way. But that was not to last forever. mean their arrival in Eretz Yisrael, the Hashgacha Nisus was to terminate, and the Hashgacha Tiris was to commence. That is the Malach Metatron. Metatron is the Sarah Teva. It represents the providence of God through the natural medium. As the providence of God manifests itself through the numerous and multifarious laws of nature. As the way in which providence manipulates all the laws of nature, so as to lead man toward his goal. The Bias Yisrael was established on a natural level. But was it really natural? It was a miraculous. It was a miraculous manner that the Medinat Yisrael was established. It came into being through the approval of all the important nations of the world, including Soviet Russia. And then, a few weeks later, they already changed their position. How can it be explained? That was an act of God. But providence manifested itself through natural media. God manipulated through the medium of the United Nations, through the medium of President Truman, through the medium of a man named Jacobson, who was an old friend of President Truman, and the God manipulated the vicissitudes of history in such a way that Medinat Yisrael came into being. So who was the messenger? Metatron was the messenger. God acted as Shindal Yud, as one who manipulates the operations of nature, the forces of nature. So, he shema bikonaf, usma bikere, yaltamabe, kiro yiso lifishachem, kishmi bikere. Now, until you arrive in Eretz Yisrael, you did not have to be trained, you did not have to fight against anyone, but when you arrive in Eretz Yisrael, you have to wage war against the Canaanites. You will have to offer your lives. It's not that God couldn't achieve a victory for the Jewish people without all these risks, without all these sacrifices. God could certainly do it after the Jews arrived in Eretz Yisrael, just as he was able to do it while the Jews were in the Midbar. But God does not want to do it. Why doesn't God want to do it? The answer is that God wants to guide men as a Shindar Yud, as a Misharit Maachet HaTeva. He wants to guide men through the natural media. Because if God were to guide men only on a supernatural level all the time, then men would have no task in this world. Then men would be a mere automaton, a spiritual automaton. There would be no purpose to men's existence. The reason as to why life has a purpose and the world in its entirety has a goal is because God wants men to become insutef to him. And men can become insutef with the Kaviyocher only if God guides men through the messenger Metatron, through natural media. So you will have to wage war. You have to wage war against the Canaanites. Al Tamaboy, Kiloyiso Lifishachem, Kishmi Bikirbe. Do you know why? If you don't train yourself, if you don't wage war, so you will suffer. Not because that might is the ultimate determining factor, has to show him. But it is me determined. Because God wants the Jewish people to resort to natural media. God wants to guide the Jewish people through the Hashgacha Tiris, rather than to Hashgacha Nisus. Then you'll see that the messenger, how the vicissitude of nature will be manipulated in such a way that everything will conform to the principle of creation. But it will only conform because of God's guidance. Without God's guidance, then you're lost. Then you have to survive him for a moment.
Some should know that it was the Stachter of Elohim, the Resorvdin, the Resatikim at Elohim, the Horistorfin, the Shabbat, the Shabbat at Elohim. Do not think that inasmuch as resorting to the natural media was conducive to your progress, was conducive to your survival, that therefore you can give up and abandon all spiritual values and you can assimilate yourself and integrate yourself within the pagan culture. As some enlightened Jews in the state of Israel think, as the former prime minister thinks, that just because a Mizrachi's royal was established, and it is true that the Jewish national home was a contributing factor toward the establishment of Mizrachi's royal, that therefore we can assimilate ourselves, raise the Stachelorelem, the Royce of them, the Resatik Matalem, but you shall endeavor to destroy the pagan practices that prevail in Eretz Israel. If you do not endeavor to destroy the pagan practices, then resorting to natural media will not help you. It only leads to your ruin. But it is the will of God that you act in accordance with the natural requirements, that you train yourself, that you prepare yourself, that so that you should be able to defend yourself, so that you should be able to wage war against the Canaanites. Because God wants to guide you through the Hashkocha TVs rather than through the Hashkocha Nisis. Now this is metaphor. And the Ramban says that HaMalach HaGoy Leisi Mikoro is the same Malach as the Malach of mentioned in Onechi Shereach Malach Lefanecha. In other words, it's Metatren. Metatren should bless the Meorim. Metatren doesn't bless the Meorim, God blesses the Meorim. But God blesses the Meorim through natural media. Through Metatren! Metatren is the medium! How does a child develop properly? Now, of course, God could make that every Jewish child should assert itself properly without the child doing anything, without the parent doing anything, without the teacher doing anything, without anybody doing anything. God could enable a child to develop properly even when he's left alone and abandoned. Like breath of the earth. But God doesn't want to do it. Why? Because the purpose that inheres in the whole creation of the world was that man should become a partner with God. So then, man must collaborate with God. God confers a blessing upon man. He endows him with wealth. Man must collaborate with God and make the proper response. God blesses men with intelligence and he enables them to acquire wisdom and knowledge. Men must make the response. And of course, that response has to be realized through natural medium. Through natural media. Through Metatron. It is the Malach Metatron that can redeem these threads. Because without resorting to natural media, then all the potential blessings will merge into a curse. Now, as Chazal says, Yiman Yivarechecho Adishem Avetecho Bichila Shata'ase Bishor Shata'ase Vilo Bishor Shata'ase. God will bless you, but there is one condition precedent to the realization of Baruch. That is, that men must make the proper response. He must be an answer. An answer! God bless you with wealth! You have to take all the measures to sit with that wealth is used in the proper channels. You have to apply it to the terms of the trust upon which God granted the wealth to you. You must be a nation. That way, there must be dedication on the part of the one that was blessed. And the answer has to conform to all the laws of nature. anything, Joanna. You must apply yourself completely so that you'll be able to utilize the maximum of your potential and to make the most out of yourself. That's the Barahadir. He's the redeemed angel. If you're not an Aether, if you don't respond to the numerous and multifarious blessings that are constantly being conferred by Hashem upon man, then you have the potential, but there is no one to redeem this potential. Only by resorting to natural media can you redeem the potential that inheres within you. The Korivans means there has to be physical power. You have to resort to Metatron in order to be Mechazik the Bracha, in order to actualize this potential of Bracha that is within you. So the Korivan, Shmi Vishem Asai, and in what direction should it be realized in that you should aim to conform to all the ideals that were professed and attained by Avraham Yitzchak, the Korivan Shmi Vishem Asai, if you are intelligent. So don't apply this intelligence, this potential, in building greater war potential, except that under unusual circumstances. But otherwise, you only bring ruin to the world. But apply it for the purpose of being able to perpetuate the heritage of Avraham. The Korivan Shmi Vishem Asai, Avraham Yitzchak, the Yidgul Oriv B'Kerevoi, so that they should be able to be fruitful and to multiply like the fish in the sea. Now Rashi says, that's the Gemara in Bava Metzia, Masichas Apeirim, the Yidru Kedogim Halolu, Sheporim V'Rovim V'Inayim Oro Sheretes Bran. Gemara says that Yosef Lehoya Ayin Oro Sheretes Bran. And this was the blessing by Yaakov, that the relatives of Yosef should be like their father, that Ayin Hora should not be shaved against them. What does it mean, that Ayin Hora should not be shaved against them? Now, Chazal mentioned a lot about Ayin Hora. Evil eye. And Ayin Hora does not work through mystical and esoteric media. The Ayin Hora works very simply through the operation of psychological laws. It is not the Ayin Hora in itself that causes so much evil, that brings ruin upon man. It is the observation of the Ayin Hora that brings havoc and ruin upon man. A child, when it's about to grow up, so if he notices that another person for whom he has respect and reverence looks at him aghast, he'll become discouraged. And they require a block. It will interfere with his progress. How is the chizuk realized? How? By giving money now. By guidance and encouragement. By lying table. You can break a child when it is on the verge of adolescence through the eye, by looking at him, and you can make him by looking at him. It all depends how you look at him. If you talk to him and you look at him in an encouraging manner, if the child thinks that you have a nice opinion of him, then he will become encouraged. He will become inspired, and he will be willing to work and to dedicate himself. But if you talk to him in a discouraging manner, if you look at him aghast, if you give him an eye in awe, if you look at him with an evil eye, it's not the evil eye, it's the observation by the child of the evil eye. That has such awful consequences. So, in order that these lads might be redeemed from the curses that can he earn this potential blessing? The potential blessing has not only Braham, but also a curse. It's the potential for Abraham, the curse.